Hi, and welcome to the Norwalk Hour for Wednesday, October 16th. I'm Brian Burgess, and we'll begin with a front page article headlined, State School Enrollment at 10-Year Low. This article by Natasha Sokoloff. At the same time that Connecticut's classrooms are slowly becoming less full, the demographics within are also evolving, according to data from the State Department of Education. The latest statewide data, comprising all grade levels across 201 school districts, tells a story about what kind of shifts have occurred in Connecticut's student body over the last decade, showcasing 10-year trends for student enrollment, race, gender, and other categories between the 2014-15 and 2023-24 school years. Across the state, enrollment is down around 6% compared to 10 years ago, the lowest it has been in at least a decade. For Fran Rabinowitz, executive director of the Connecticut Association of Public School Superintendents, that downward trend is certainly visible across Connecticut schools. In the 2014-15 school year, there were 546,349 students, according to state data. In the 2023-24 school year, there were 512,652. That means that compared to a decade ago, there were about 33 fewer students in Connecticut schools. Rabinowitz attributes this decrease to a number of factors, whether it be residents having fewer children, an aging population, or overall cost of living. I think Connecticut is an expensive place to live, and I think that may be a part of the fact that we are losing some younger families, she said. Even some of the state's urban districts and the largest student bodies are not immune to the trend. For example, in Hartford Public Schools, enrollment was actually narrowly up in 2023-24 by 65 students year over year. The 10-year trend, however, shows a 23.3% decrease in students since 2014-15. And the New Haven School District has seen a 12.65% decrease in enrollment from 2014-15 to 2023-24. Some of that change can likely be attributed to students attending magnet schools not managed by the Hartford School District. Even while the overall data shows fewer students across the state, there are some outliers. As Rabinowitz said, she's noticed certain districts growing by leaps and bounds. Even while there are fewer students, that doesn't mean that districts can afford to have less staff, because the need is still there and growing, Rabinowitz said. Losing 100 kids doesn't mean that I can go down a teacher, she said. In fact, the number of Connecticut students with high needs has increased by about 9% over the last 10 years, state data shows. Students with high needs include those with a disability, an English learner, or eligible for free reduced-price meals, according to State Department of Education. And this past school year, more and more students have been categorized in that group, a 10-year high. In the 2023-24 school year, there were 281,080, or 54.83% of students with high needs. In 2014-15, there were 45.82%, meaning the high needs group has increased by more than 30,000 students in that period. Being able to meet those needs was certainly a concern for districts, Rabinowitz said. The percentage of students with disabilities has also climbed. In 2014-15, there were 13.32%, or 72,773 students with disabilities. In 2023-24, that number has jumped to 17.92%, or 91,847 students with disabilities. In addition, the percentage of English learners specifically has grown by about 4%, or almost 20,000 students, since the 2014-15 school year. Rabinowitz said it was important to ensure those students are supported. Districts are also looking at how to help students living in poverty, which has been an issue for a long time, Rabinowitz said, as state data shows that the percentage of students eligible for free meals has typically stayed between around 32% and 37% over the past 10 years. In the last school year, that hit a high of 37.94% of students eligible for free meals. Over the last decade, the data indicates that racial and gender demographics have also changed in Connecticut schools. Even while there are less students, schools are becoming more diverse than they were 10 years ago. For one, the number of white students has seen a gradual decline. In the 2023-24 school year, white students made up 46.23% of Connecticut students, more than 10% less than in 2014-15. Another stark racial and ethnic demographic trend in Connecticut is in the steady climb of Hispanic and Latino students, as the number of Hispanic and Latino students has grown nearly 9% since 2014-15. There were about 38,500 more Hispanic and Latino students, making up 31% of students in the last school year compared to 2014-15. An increasingly diverse population was wonderful, Rabinowitz said, but that also meant that Connecticut schools need to acknowledge and understand the significance. Also on today's front page, not buildable. Norwalkers say new zoning rules are curbing builders. This article by Colleen Rose Ozanek. Since the city's Planning and Zoning Commission passed the first extensive zoning rewrite last December, residents say that they've been feeling the impact of the new rules and urged amendments. The zoning rewrite looked to increase housing stock, increase mixed-use development, reduce flood zone regulations, and set more sustainable standards. But residents who spoke at the public hearing portion of the commission's most recent special meeting said it's also cutting into their projects. The commission looks to set another public hearing after taking into account the residents' comments and going back to sharpen the pencils, Planning and Zoning Director Steve Kleppen said at last Thursday's meeting. He said the commission knew that not all of the new regulations would work in practice, which is why public hearings were planned to modify the rewrite. Lou Garcia, an architect in the city, said the new zoning rules have challenged some of his clients and projects. It's on me to make sure that your regulations are not only enacted, but also well-presented, Garcia said. I do have quite a few clients in Norwalk that are holding, waiting for this thing to be resolved because they bought property or they have plans, and now they're in limbo because the regulations changed and now we're unable to proceed. The commission's newest revisions calls for driveways to be set back 3 feet from a property line, which is challenging on small lots, Garcia said. Alina Rodescu-Pichon, an architect with Skyview Builders in Norwalk, described a plan for one of her clients that is no longer possible to execute with the zoning code. The 5,100-square-foot home in question is also limited by some of the setback regulations Garcia described. It's just not buildable. It's not, Rodescu-Pichon said. We can't build a house if it's 12 feet on each side. Meanwhile, resident Diane Lauricella encouraged the commissioners to loosen parking restrictions to allow for more accessory dwelling units, which she said will help increase affordable housing stock. The commission said that changes to the code would likely come into effect by January at the earliest, following necessary legal notices and public hearings. Before the public comment portion, the commission discussed language proposals for building and impervious surface coverage, grading and building heights, stories and building heights in flood zones, and two-family dwellings, though residents' public comments often went beyond that scope. Commission Chairman Lewis Schulman said the commission looks to vote on the changes in the next public hearing. The Commission's presentation before the public comment portion described how the Commission modified zoning regulations aligned with the public feedbacks since last year. Building coverage and impervious surface coverage rules were too restrictive in smaller lots and other areas, the presentation said, so the Commission now looks to regulate total hardscape and modify allowances. The new building height definition in flood zones was modified to be more discreet and describes rules for specific roof types and architectural features to cause less confusion, the presentation said. Two-family dwellings are allowed in all CD2 zone lots in Norwalk with the new zoning rewrite, but there have been a number of practical issues preventing their construction, the presentation said. Impervious surface coverage, parking space, facade and garage limitations, driveway width and setbacks and building setbacks. The proposed language would allow for front-facing garages to occupy 20 feet of the facade at most, reduce the yard setback, and allow more parking. And on Darien's Great Island, dogs are forbidden. Picnics are okay. This front-page article by Molly Hirsch. Darien officials are preparing to open up more of Great Island to the public, but residents will still have to leave their dogs at home, at least for now. The Darien Board of Selectmen approved a maximum budget of $25,000 to move forward with immediate improvements that would expand access to parts of the 60-acre estate that have been closed off since Great Island opened to the public in March, along with updated rules that will go into effect once the work is completed. Under the amended rules, residents will be able to picnic on Great Island, though unauthorized fires like those for grilling are not allowed. The property also now includes public bathroom facilities with at least one portable toilet on hand and at least one more planned for the future. Great Island will still remain limited to pedestrians only, no riding bikes or motorized scooters on the property. However, the rules do specify that bicycles can be left at the entrance. The only vehicles allowed on the property are emergency vehicles and authorized town employees, contractors, or others authorized by the First Selectman. The new rules come right as the town looks toward expanding access to closed-off parts of the property. Selectman Monica McNally, who chairs the Great Island Advisory Committee, said there are 10 areas the committee is looking to open in the near future, including the boathouse, beach house, and mansion grounds. Improvements include new signs to indicate which areas are temporarily closed, adding and replacing trash and recycling bins, grinding down stumps and filling woodchuck holes near the mansion. McNally confirmed that the selectmen's approval does not mean that these areas are open, nor that these rules are in effect quite yet. None of them will be in effect until the improvements are completed, McNally told Hearst, Connecticut. A specific date as to when the changes will go into effect is not set, though McNally said, "We're moving as quickly as possible." One hot topic, left off the table for the time being, is allowing visitors on Great Island to bring their dogs. Members of the Great Island Advisory Committee considered including a rule to allow dogs through April 30th, but ultimately tabled the issue after lengthy debate during a September 30th meeting. Some on the committee, like Parks and Recreation Commission Chair Lorraine Bora, cited concerns about rule-breaking she sees around some of the town's recreational spaces, such as off-leash dogs at Weed Beach in the winter, or residents not picking up after their dogs. Others referenced the high volume of requests they've gotten to allow dogs, with Board of Finance Chair Jim Palin saying, "I've heard from hundreds of people who think it's crazy that they can't bring dogs on there." McNally recommended holding off on making a decision on the dogs until the town's Great Island Master Plan consultant, Reed Hildebrand, could weigh in with their own thoughts, as well as results from the Great Island Resident Survey. Reed Hildebrand Representative Ted Marchant told members of the committee that of the early surveys received, the four main concerns residents reported around dogs were the effects that dogs and dog waste might have on the property's ecology and water quality, off-leash dogs getting in the way of residents with limited mobility, and some residents' general fear of dogs. Though the issue was not on the table for the selectmen to vote on for October 7th, Board of Selectmen members acknowledged the high volume of emails and inquiries they've had on allowing dogs. Member Sarah Newman saying that she was stunned by the volume of feedback she personally received. McNally said that she did not feel comfortable putting a date on when the dog issue will be back on the table, though she said, "We will definitely be discussing this on the 17th when the committee meets." Some of the access expansion has already begun. Residents can now explore the Bridle Trail on Great Island, a walking path just under a half mile that serves as home to a wide variety of birds, including a pair of nesting bald eagles and Luna, the great horned owl rescued and released back onto the property over the spring. In a front page article by Ignacio Lagarda, 125th House Race, O'Day's and Bennett's Priorities. The race for the 125th District in Connecticut pits a political veteran against a newcomer. Incumbent State Representative Tom O'Day, a Republican, has represented parts of New Canaan, Darien, and North Stamford for 12 years. He'll have to defeat Democrat Jason Bennett to extend that tenure. O'Day said that he's an advocate for giving local cities and towns the power to make their own decisions related to land use and public education. The most prevalent issue facing my constituents is the attempted state takeover of important local zoning decisions, including controversial housing statute 8-30G, to create an adversarial relationship between the state and municipalities. O'Day wrote in a response to the emailed questionnaire, O'Day, an experienced trial attorney, listed safety and fiscal responsibility as some of his priorities. Bennett decided to throw his hat in the ring after previously endorsed candidate Chris Coyle decided not to run. He said he's running for office for his three daughters, a 6-year-old and 3-year-old twins. I want to see them grow up in a community that is invested in their success, safety, and well-being, wrote Bennett, a New Canaan resident, in response to a list of emailed questions. I am deeply concerned about the idea of politicians and courts at any level of government, and their supporters up and down the ballot, believing that they can exercise control over women's bodies. Besides reproductive rights, Bennett lists the environment, growing the economy, enacting safe gun laws, and addressing energy costs as some of his priorities. Bennett previously lived in New York City before moving to Connecticut. He has a Bachelor of Science degree from the University of New Mexico and currently works as a Chief Technology Officer and Managing Partner of a technology consultancy firm. O'Day, who's originally from Western Pennsylvania and moved to New Canaan in 1998, is a Deputy House Republican leader and serves on the Environment, Judiciary, Legislative Management, and Transportation Committees. The state representative, who has three children, served on the New Canaan Town Council from 2006 to 2012, prior to being elected to his current position. He touted his experience in the Connecticut General Assembly. As state representative, I have built a bipartisan coalition of legislators and advocates necessary to pass reforms to state statutes, which disproportionately impact highly developed suburbs like New Canaan and Darien, including in 2024 when I proposed and passed an amendment that gives municipalities more credit for affordable housing that they've built, he wrote. Both candidates talked about ways to make a living in the region more affordable. Inflation and soaring energy costs are affecting residents across the board, so my colleagues and I unveiled a plan in the state capitol which provided immediate energy cost relief and long-term savings and sustainability, O'Day wrote. Bennett said that in each of the municipalities in the district he hopes to represent, there's a desire to maintain the character of those places while driving down the cost of living. He wrote, "This is where I believe we need to focus considerable effort on innovation and new ideas, including, for example, the role of modern transportation to allow people to move about more easily and efficiently to and from work and other places." In other election news, in an article by Ken Dixon, 12 vacant seats mean opportunities for new lawmakers. There are a dozen seats up for grabs in the General Assembly districts where incumbents, some with many years in the legislature, are not seeking re-election. A pair of Stamford incumbents in the State House of Representatives were ousted by their local town committees and subsequent primary balloting, while other districts have lawmakers who are choosing to step aside for various reasons. In all, 11 House seats and a single Senate vacancy will be filled by a new generation of state lawmakers. In Senate District 22, which covers Bridgeport, Trumbull, and Monroe, after 10 years, Democratic Senator Marilyn Moore is not seeking re-election, although she's promised to remain in the public policy realm. Sujata Gacker-Wilcox of Trumbull, a Quinnipiac University professor who tried three times to unseat State Representative David Rutigliano of Trumbull, won the August Senate primary. First-time candidate Chris Carina of Trumbull is the Republican candidate. Independent Robert Halstead, a former Bridgeport City Council member, completes the field of three in a district that has gone back and forth between Democrat and Republican senators in recent decades. In House District 11, which covers East Hartford and Manchester, in the spring, veteran state representative Jeff Curry, a Democrat and Deputy House Majority Leader who co-chaired the Legislative Education Committee, announced that he would not seek re-election after 10 years in office. Democrat Patrick Biggins, a member of the East Hartford Board of Education, is seeking election to the seat. Republican Salima Davis, an Economic Development Commissioner for East Hartford and a former mayoral candidate there, is the other candidate. In House District 26, which covers New Britain, earlier this year, 11-term Representative Peter Tursiak announced his impending retirement. David DeFronzo, a former city council member whose father, Donald, was a state senator from the city, is the Democratic candidate with a cross-endorsement from the Working Families Party. The Republican candidate is Barbara Marino, the vice president of the New Britain Board of Education. In House District 36, Chester, Deep River, Essex, and Haddam, three-term Representative Christine Palm, the Democrat from Chester, decided not to seek re-election this year, opening the seat up for either Democrat Renee Muir or Deep River Selectwoman Catherine Russell, a Republican. Muir, who runs a horse farm in Deep River with her husband, stresses the need for fiscal conservatism. Russell lists tackling climate change among her priorities. In House District 42, covering New Canaan, Ridgefield, and Wilton, Representative Keith Denning, Democrat from Wilton, a retired nurse, announced back in January that he would not seek re-election after a single term. Neither Democrat Savit Constantine nor Republican Kim Healy, cross-endorsed by the Independent Party, has held elective office. Healy lost the race for the 26th District State Senate race to Will Haskell in 2020 and the 2022 House race to Denning. Constantine, also of Wilton, is campaigning on the need for more affordable housing. Healy, a member of the Wilton Board of Selectmen, wants to bring in more state money to lower property taxes. In House District 51, covering Killingley, Putnam, and Thompson, State Representative Rick Hayes, Republican from Putnam, a retired police chief, isn't running for a fourth term, opening up the seat for either son-in-law Republican Chris Stewart, who said he wants to bring youth to the House of Representatives, or Democrat Renee LaPalme Waldron, who has been a cross-endorsed by the Working Families and Independent parties. In House District 58, covering Enfield, State Representative Tom Arnone, a Democrat from Enfield, is retiring from the General Assembly after three terms. Democrat John Santinella is running against Enfield Republican Town Councilor Bob Hendrickson. Santinella is a three-year member of the Enfield Town Council and has been cross-endorsed by the Independent Party. Hendrickson has previously run for this House seat. In House District 69, covering Bridgewater, New Milford, Roxbury, and Southbury, Representative Cindy Harrison, Republican from Southbury, an accountant and farmer, did not seek re-election to a third term. Republican Jason Bushbaum, serving his fifth term as a member of the Southbury Board of Selectmen, is running against Democrat Ed Adelson, a resident of Heritage Village who's a former Southbury First Selectman. In House District 117, West Haven, Orange, and Milford, first elected in 2015, Representative Charles Ferraro, a Republican from West Haven, is retiring from the General Assembly. Voters will determine whether they want Democrat M.J. Shannon, a General Assembly committee clerk who is cross-endorsed by the Working Families and Independent parties, or Republican Raymond Collins III, the former head of the West Haven Police Commission, whose late father served eight terms as state representative for the district. In House District 131, Naugatuck, Oxford, and Southbury, one of the longest-serving members of the House, Representative David Labriola, Republican from Oxford, who was first elected in 2002, is not seeking re-election, but is on the ballot as unopposed for the judge of probate position in this region. Democrat Ellen Fox, a former high school teacher and registrar of voters in Oxford, is in the race with Republican Arnold Jensen, a chemical engineer who's a member of Oxford's Board of Selectmen. In House District 146 in Stamford, third-term Representative David Michel from Stamford lost the Democratic Town Committee endorsement and then the August primary to newcomer Eilish Collins, Maine, who works in the field of educational technology and has been cross-endorsed by the Independent Party. Maine's opponent is Republican Jim Malerva, who says he has a background in finance and volunteers with a home repair nonprofit called Homefront. And finally, in House District 148, which covers Stamford, first-term Representative Annabelle Figueroa of Stamford caused a firestorm of local controversy earlier this year when she allegedly made anti-Semitic remarks about her primary opponent, fellow Democrat Jonathan Jacobson, an 8-year member of the Board of Representatives. Jacobson won the August primary and will face Republican Olga Anastos, the manager of Landmark Curly's Diner in downtown Stamford, whom Figueroa defeated in a 2023 special election. In other news, Cigna customers could lose coverage for Hartford Healthcare services. The health insurer's current contract with Hartford Healthcare contract expires on November 1st. This article by Paul Schott. Health insurer Cigna and Hartford Healthcare are negotiating a contract renewal, but Cigna policyholders could soon have to pay higher out-of-network rates if the two organizations do not reach an agreement by the end of this month. A letter that Bloomfield-based Cigna recently sent to policyholders outlined the consequences if the company's current contract with Hartford Healthcare expires on November 1st. In that scenario, policyholders would start paying out-of-network rates for services provided by professional medical groups and other non-hospital services in the HHC network starting in November, while hospital services would switch to non-network rates on January 1st, according to the letter. We continue to negotiate with Hartford Healthcare in good faith, working toward a reasonable agreement that will keep healthcare affordable for our local employees, our customers, and their families, Cigna officials said on Friday. We are focused on reaching a mutual agreement by the end of the month to mitigate any potential disruption. In their own statement on Monday, HHC officials confirmed they are still negotiating with Cigna. We continue to work diligently through ongoing discussions and believe we can reach a mutually agreeable contract and resolution, HHC officials said. Our primary goal is to ensure that our patients are well cared for. If the contract expires on November 1st, Cigna would continue covering all HHC hospital services at in-network rates until December 31st, through a 60-day continuation period required by state law, according to the letter. HHC's hospitals include Bacchus Hospital in Norwich, Charlotte Hungerford Hospital in Torrington, Hartford Hospital, Mid-State Medical Center in Meriden, St. Vincent's Medical Center in Bridgeport, the Hospital of Central Connecticut in New Britain, and Wyndham Hospital. If Hartford Healthcare System leaves your plan's network, you'll likely pay more for the same services at their hospitals, the letter reads. For example, you would have to pay your plan's out-of-network benefit rate plus any charges not covered by your plan, which would cost you more or 100% of the cost if your plan doesn't have an out-of-network benefit. The letter also notes, emergency care services received at Hartford Healthcare System will be covered at the in-network level under your plan's emergency room coverage. In addition, according to the letter, you may qualify for continuity of care. It would allow you to continue care at the in-network benefit level at Hartford Healthcare System for a period of time. Cigna and HHC officials did not respond to a CT Insider inquiry about the number of Cigna policyholders who have received HHC services in the past year. And that's all the time we have for today. I'm Brian Burgess, and you've been listening to the Wednesday, October 16th edition of the Norwalk Hour. Thank you for listening. Have a great day.